Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show, conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. Let's briefly discuss the coronavirus pandemic, and I'll provide an update with some of the latest statistics. Then I want to devote most of the show to the recent nationwide protests and riots, prominently featuring the now powerful and wealthy Black Lives Matter so-called movement that, if it ever truly was a political action organization, has been hijacked by the political left and is being used to promote the left's radical agenda to destroy America. We'll take a closer look at BLM and its backers and hear some interesting things about it by commentators from different backgrounds, including a former supporter. First, let's talk about coronavirus, or COVID-19, as it is also known. Here's a press release on the World Health Organization's website titled "The WHO Director General's Opening Remarks at the Media Briefing on COVID-19, 8 June 2020. It begins, quote, "Almost 7 million cases of COVID-19 have now been reported to WHO and almost 400,000 deaths. Although the situation in Europe is improving, globally it is worsening. More than 100,000 cases have been reported on 9 of the past 10 days. Yesterday, more than 136,000 cases were reported, the most in a single day so far. Almost 75% of yesterday's cases come from 10 countries, mostly in the Americas and South Asia. Most countries in the African region are still experiencing an increase in the number of COVID-19 cases," the press release continues, "with some reporting cases in new geographic areas, although most countries in the region have less than 1,000 cases. We have also seen increasing numbers of cases in parts of Eastern Europe and Central Asia. At the same time, we're encouraged that several countries around the world are seeing positive signs. In these countries, the biggest threat now is complacency. Results from studies to see how much of the population has been exposed to the virus show that most people globally are still susceptible to infection. We continue to urge active surveillance to ensure the virus does not rebound, especially as mass gatherings of all kinds are starting to resume in some countries." End quote. Remember, this is purportedly coming from a reputed Ethiopian Marxist supported by Red China, who helped China cover up the seriousness of the pandemic after it originated in Wuhan, China, late last year, and then praised the Chinese Communist government for its supposedly effective actions in dealing with the pandemic, which it was claimed were a model for the rest of the world. All this has led the USA cutting ties with the WHO and ending its roughly $450 million annual funding for the WHO. Here is in the U.S., the government's Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, states that as of yesterday, June 13th, there have been 2,038,344 cases of COVID-19 reported and 114,625 deaths. However, the accuracy of those numbers is in dispute. Dr. Deborah Birx, White House Coronavirus Response Coordinator, has reportedly criticized the CDC in private for using archaic and inaccurate reporting methodology. And Birx herself announced during one of the White House pandemic briefings that the CDC was telling doctors to attribute all deaths of patients who had COVID-19 solely to COVID-19, regardless of other factors. All this being said, the nation has been seeing broad declines in the numbers of hospitalizations and deaths from the disease in recent weeks, despite some spikes in a number of locations around the country as the draconian and economically devastating lockdowns are being eased and the country is reopening. Meanwhile, our Marxist-loving media elites, desperate as usual to destroy Donald Trump by blaming him for coronavirus deaths in the U.S., have been acting like the recent spikes in coronavirus cases are the end of the world. And you have to look at the actual statistics and facts of the matter to get a better picture of what's happening. yesterday I was watching, I believe it was an NBC news report about these recent spikes. And again, you'd think it was an absolute horrifying situation. Then they provided some facts. For instance, looking at Texas, it was reported that Texas had seen a 19% jump in new coronavirus cases in the previous reporting period, over the previous reporting period, which was portrayed as devastating. The total number of cases? About 174. And Texas has a population of just under 30 million people? Why? End of the world. The reporter giving this information then interviewed a doctor who is an official of a medical organization in Texas, who was asked if it wasn't too soon to allow people to stop being cloistered in their homes, go back to work, and return to normalcy. Thankfully, the doctor responded that everyone just needs to keep practicing common sense protective measures. No recommendation to shut down the state or country. Again, shut down the state or country. In the same report, another medical professional related that the nation as a whole has been seeing a roughly 1% increase over recent figures in new cases and deaths. That still means tens of thousands of new cases and an unacceptable number of deaths, he commented. But he also did not claim we should shut down the country again over this. Amen. Okay. Now let's look at the continuing nationwide protests and developments, ostensibly prompted by the tragic death, what looks like a murder, of George Floyd, an American of African descent in Minneapolis, Minnesota, at the hands of a white police officer, Derek Chauvin, who was seen in a cell phone video pushing down with his knee on the neck of a prone, handcuffed George Floyd for some 8 or 9 minutes as Floyd stated he couldn't breathe, and then later died. Chauvin was charged with third-degree murder and manslaughter. Then the charges were upgraded to second degree. Chauvin and the other officers taking part in the arrest of Floyd were all fired, and the other officers have also been charged with aiding in Floyd's death. This incident, tragic and horrifying as it is, has been used to foment unprecedented rage, hysteria, and hatred toward police, white people, capitalism, and America, leading to riots in cities across the country and calls to defund and eliminate police departments and radically reorganize them so the left can better control them, along with implementation of a host of other radical ideas. Prominent in the demonstrations and riots across the country, as well as in European and other countries, has been the leftist extremist organization Black Lives Matter. This radical leftist organization is awash in cash and, thanks to mainstream media whipped up hysteria, is being used to intimidate anyone who dares to speak out about them and their radical agenda. Astonishingly, we are continuing to see all manner of public and private sector officials, celebrities, and alike kowtowing to BLM and pledging money and support. For example, you have National Football League Commissioner Roger Goodell saying the league was wrong for not listening to players fighting for racial equality and encouraging them to peacefully protest. Goodell, who is white, is obviously trying to save his job by attempting to placate the many black players and others in the league. Hell, why doesn't Goodell step down and be replaced by a black man or woman? If things are so terrible and racist in America, and there's all this systemic racism, and Goodell, who's no doubt a multimillionaire, really wants to do something about it, then by all means, give up his job. Then we saw old Nancy Pelosi, House Speaker, and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, along with other Democrats supporting BLM and the protests and riots, by publicly taking a knee, bowing in subservience to the contention that America is a fundamentally racist and unjust place. After a few moments bending down on one knee, Nancy had trouble getting up, and a black woman rushed forward to help her up. Why don't Chuck and Nancy give up their jobs in favor of blacks? And now the radicals want to remove all statues of people associated with the Confederacy and rename U.S. military bases bearing the name of anyone associated with the South during the Civil War and after, or who is proclaimed to be a racist in any way. Of course, that's just the start. Erasing history and replacing it with that which reflects communist ideology is a typical tactic of the left. I'm not an expert on the history of the Civil War, but I've read that some 800,000 people were killed during the Civil War, the bloodiest conflict in American history. I think that also depends on which statistics you use, but many of them who were killed were in the South, and the South was devastated by the Civil War. I don't have a strong opinion one way or another about statues of Confederate generals and politicians in the nation's capital and elsewhere, or about military bases and airports named for such people, and I don't have a problem with dialogue about these monuments, but I imagine the erection of these things and the naming of these places has been an attempt at reconciliation and remembrance of our history and the people who were part of it. But of course, all that means nothing when compared with the insane, implacable hatred of the left. Now, just what is Black Lives Matter? And how is it that this organization is so powerful? Let's look at some things about this group you probably don't know. An article, August 16, 2016, in the Washington Times, had this to say about BLM. Quote, "For all its talk of being a street uprising, Black Lives Matter is increasingly awash in cash, raking in pledges of more than $100 million from liberal foundations and others eager to contribute to what has become the grant-making cause du jour. The Ford Foundation and Borealis Philanthropy recently announced the formation of the Black-Led Movement Fund, BLMF, a six-year pooled donor campaign aimed at raising $100 million for the Black Lives Matter Coalition. I'm sorry, for the Movement for Black Lives Coalition. That funding comes in addition to more than $33 million in grants to the Black Lives Matter movement from top Democratic Party donor George Soros through his Open Society Foundations, as well as grant making from the Center for American Progress. The BLMF provides grants, movement-building resources, and technical assistance to organizations working to advance the leadership and vision of young, black, queer, feminists, and immigrant leaders who are shaping and leading a national conversation about criminalization, policing, and race in America," said the Borealis announcement. In doing so, however, the article writer states, the foundations have aligned themselves with the staunch left-wing platform of the Movement for Black Lives, which unveiled a policy agenda shortly after the fund was announced, accusing Israel of being an apartheid state guilty of genocide. Released August 1, 2016, the platform also calls for defunding police departments. Defunding police departments, race-based reparations, voting rights for illegal immigrants, fossil fuel divestment, an end to private education and charter schools. So we have to make sure the pupils are all being properly indoctrinated in leftist ideology. And it also includes a universal basic income and free college for blacks. As far as critics are concerned, the article continues, the grab bag platform combined with a staggering underwriting commitment offer more evidence that Black Lives Matter is being used as a conduit for left-wing politics as usual. End quote. Now let's hear from other observers about BLM, starting with this compilation of audio clips from video from band.video, a website of Infowars.com. It features Infowars' David Knight talking about the origins of Antifa, which stands for anti-fascist and is used as an umbrella term for the communist groups rioting and taking part in protests along with BLM members. Then you'll hear from conservative politician Nigel Farage commenting on the BLM protests and unrest in Britain. And finally, Infowars founder Alex Jones on what he sees as a communist attempt to take over America. Please play soundbite one.
Today I talked about in great detail and I don't have enough time to talk about it, but I was sent by Mark Hall, who I've interviewed numerous times, about his documentary, Killing Ed, where he talks about charter schools and how you have some corporations, and the worst case is the Fethullah Gulen organization, operates in every other country as Islamic madrasas, getting massive amounts of money. About $750 million the last time I saw the figures on it, But that was a worst case example. But he has lived in Germany, and he sent me a picture going back to 1932, 33, the KPD. And the flag, if you can zoom in on the desk here and you can see this. Now, it's not, this is a black and white print, but the flag is actually the same color, Antifascista Action. And the flag is exactly like the Antifa flag. This is a long-term communist group. And as I mentioned today, I went down the list of people and organizations that are behind this. They are communist organizations. They have been funded by people who are socialists and communists. They pull together the race war, going back to the Weather Underground, Bill Ayers. He went into education because he wanted to push white privilege. They called it white skin privilege. When he stopped bombing buildings, when he stopped killing police officers, he decided that he would bomb your children's minds. And now what we have seen through Common Core and the federalization of education, we've now seen thoroughly radicalized youth pushing the agenda of these Marxist organizations using a race war, because they couldn't do it with a class war, using a race war to overthrow American society and reset it to their dystopia.
There are now over 50 metropolitan police officers that have been injured, some of them seriously. And yet, my argument here isn't against equality of opportunity. It's not to say there may not still be things in society that aren't perfectly fair, but it is to say this, and to say it very, very clearly. This Black Lives Matter movement is a dangerous Marxist organization, hell-bent on anarchy, and we need to wake up, get some facts into our heads, and understand what it is we're fighting. The main agenda of the Black Lives Movement and Black Lives Matters is the defunding of the police force. That's right. They want to effectively close down the established police force in the United States of America. And that's what the key activists in this country want to do as well. They're aiming at a radical redistribution of wealth. They're hinting at assets being taken from private companies and put into the hands of workers. I mean, look, this is a little bit like, you know, the 1917 Lenin Manifesto, which saw the communist revolution.
And that's exactly what this is. And everybody's sitting here flat-footed, laughing at the left, because you see what clowns the minions are. But it's not clowns on top of it. It is the most powerful, wealthy, rich people on the planet that are ruthless and cold-blooded and know that we have a heart and know that we care. So they use our altruistic nature as weakness and are totally dominating society. If you want to rebel against the man and against the system, then it's the multinational mega corporations that have set China up as the model of planetary control. And it is absolute, pure, unadulterated, complete evil on its face. So yes, you see the throngs and the masses that they have brainwashed out there as cannon fodder. And you have to understand that as they domesticate more people, it's only going to get worse.
Now let's hear some more audio excerpts from Band.Video. This compilation from InfoWars' Robert Barnes on his program American Countdown, June 4, titled Soros and the Secret Origins of Black Lives Matter. Barnes is referring to the former Hungarian immigrant born Georgi Swartz, now known by the name his family changed to Soros. The fabulously wealthy, left-leaning billionaire George Soros sees America as the main obstacle to his vision of a world government, economic system, and ideology, and wants to radically transform our country in support of that vision. In case you haven't noticed, BLM has many white followers and supporters, and as is the case with his partner in these protests and unrest, Antifa, many, if not most, of the looters and rioters are also whites. Please play soundbite 2.
Welcome to another edition of American Countdown here on Thursday, June the 4th, 2020. The question resolved tonight, who is behind the riots? We know of the participation of BLM, Black Lives Matter. We know from the Attorney General and from common sense and from knowledge of recent history the role and involvement of Antifa and Antifa-allied groups. We know of the media's participation by exaggerating certain risks, building fake narratives, and hiding the degree of looting and burning and arson taking place. The question is whether it could be coordinated with the help of some one or ones more powerful even than those groups individually on their own. Where do those groups partially get their funding, their support, their subsidy, their ability to organize in the first instance? So that's a question we will explore tonight. First, there is a good article called Connoisseur of Chaos in the City Journal, which is published by the Manhattan Institute, which goes into the history of one George Soros. As it details, George Soros, a man who you probably don't know, was convicted of insider trading a long time ago. He's someone who managed to get fantastically wealthy without building anything, without making anything, without apparently selling anything, without employing very many people. And he appeared to come almost from scratch to that degree of billionaire wealth and then has used it to influence politics. What is less known about him is that he's been accused of insider trading on multiple contexts, including his backing of the alleged Ponzi scheme Herbalife. But he was actually convicted of it when a court actually took him to trial in France. He was found guilty and levied a fine of millions of dollars. But there's more to who George Soros is. There is sort of a Sorosian world order, as this article goes into detail, where Soros declared that the main obstacle to a stable and just world order, in his view, is the United States. He sees the United States and nationalism as his primary enemy, adversary to overcome and undo. Indeed, he sees a world of open borders and global governance. He's been open about this in his Open Societies Foundation that then funnels money to a wide range of grants and institutions, part of which ended up being leaked by a group of DC hackers who got into it and disclosed it to the world, disclosing the degree and the scope and the scale of it. WikiLeaks was also involved in exposing George Soros when they exposed the DNC leaks involving John Podesta, because there were emails concerning the George Soros Institution in that regard as well. If you read his background, he grew up in Hungary and was there during Nazi Germany. His father believed in what's called Esperanto, the artificial language that he and other disciples around the world believed would eventually become the world's tongue. And that was, he believed there would be one language and one world. That's the ideology in which he was tutored when he was young. His next second major influence was when he was listed as the adopted grandson of a Nazi officer in Hungary during the Nazi era. And in that respect, he actually openly talked about what his role was and how he was not bashful, ashamed, or afraid of the fact that he helped participate and watched on as this adopted grandfather actually went about looting Jewish wealth in the country. Let's take a look at that video clip.
You're a Hungarian Jew who escaped the Holocaust by posing as a Christian.
Right.
And you watched lots of people get shipped off to the death camps.
Right. I was 14 years old. And I would say that that's when my character was made.
In what way?
That one should think ahead, one should understand and anticipate events, and one is threatened. It was a tremendous threat of evil. I mean, it was a very personal experience of evil.
My understanding is that you went out with this protector of yours who swore that you were his adopted godson.
Yes.
Went out, in fact, and helped in the confiscation of property from the Jews.
That's right.
I mean, that sounds like an experience that would send lots of people to the psychiatric couch for many, many years. Was it difficult?
Not at all. Not at all. Maybe as a child, you don't see the connection. But it created no problem at all.
No feeling of guilt?
No.
For example, that I'm Jewish, and here I am watching these people go, I could just as easily be there. I should be there. None of that.
Well, of course, I could be on the other side, or I could be the one from whom the thing is being taken away. But there was no sense that I shouldn't be there, because that was... well, actually, funny way, it's just like in markets, that if I weren't there, of course I wasn't doing it, but somebody else would be taking it away anyhow. In other words, whether I was there or not, I was only a spectator, the property was being taken away. So I had no role in taking away that property. So I had no sense of guilt.
Notice that when he talks about no sense of guilt, but also when he says that he was only a spectator, it's the one time in the interview that his eyes close, which can be a telltale sign of somebody that's lying, that he may have been more than just a spectator in facilitating the confiscation and looting of Jewish wealth during the Nazi era. There is this sort of hagiographic, mythical portion of George Soros' time during that era, in which if you get to the YouTube favored media publications or favored videos or other forms of media propaganda, you'll see they claim that they'll suggest that he changed his last name. His family changed their last name in order to escape the Holocaust. That's completely false. He was a co-complicit participant in activities that took place in the Holocaust. They had changed their name before then. The reason why he changed their name was to follow that Esperanto religious language belief, to change the name to Soros to mean to soar, as part of this idea that there would be one language, that there would be one world, and that this would govern all. That's where the mindset and mentality comes from, and it's one of the many propaganda components of George Soros' story that is hidden from the institutional and establishment press. In the same capacity, he described his following of a Viennese professor, Karl Popper, that where he got the idea for the Open Society and the name of its current foundation and political institutes that spread money around to those who will destabilize governments around the world. He described it as, quote, a place free of tribal affinities like religion, like nationalism, like traditional economics. This is someone who does not believe in traditional religion, sees it as a threat, doesn't believe in national identity, sees it as a threat, doesn't believe in traditional economic formulas, sees it too as a threat, though he has got fabulously rich while banking and betting on the crises that take place around the world. In that capacity, the article goes on to detail how he actually told people early on that the reason why he stayed, he was going to just make some money and retire and be a philosophy professor, but that stopped quickly because he decided he liked the money and his, quote, self-importance. As he himself puts it, to put it bluntly, I fancied myself as some kind of God. That's what George Soros himself said to others and why he continued to do what he did and why he continues to operate as he does. Indeed, there are a few, if you look at how he's actually made his money, as the article details, quote, there are only a few speculators who have so profited from disasters and crises like George Soros has. Indeed, often he can be seen as complicit in creating those crises, particularly in currencies and other aspects, by his influence in the markets. He believes in that. He believes that he can take certain actions that can cause the markets to react in a certain way to enrich himself at the expense of the public and at the expense of various governments. Indeed, as he described it during the 2008 financial crisis, where, again, he got fabulously wealthy after he had almost busted the Bank of England about 15 years before, famously, he said, quote, I'm having a very good crisis, he told the reporter. Once again, crisis for Soros is opportunity. Opportunity for personal wealth, opportunity for pushing through his political objectives and agenda. Indeed, leaked emails and papers from the Open Society that DC Leaks exposed back in 2015-16 detail about how he saw the Syrian refugee crisis as, quote, an opportunity to rethink migration's governance. Translation, use agitprop to flood Europe and the U.S. with refugees as a way to bring about the world that he wants to believe in, one where old borders and institutions are irrelevant, one in which American exceptionalism is no more. Indeed, he has long been an opponent of the state of Israel and has done everything possible to undermine its existence and its political support, including donating millions of dollars to various organizations that have ties to Palestinian terror operations. Further, the leaks also further exposed his willingness and readiness to shape media coverage, including, quote, Let's select journalists from the five target countries and offer them long-stay reporting trips. And this was his involvement in the complicity of overthrowing the government of Ukraine. If you want to understand the way his mindset and mentality operates, this is someone who grew up in an era in which governments were overthrown with ease. And he has helped facilitate the overthrow of many of those governments throughout Eastern and Central Europe. Many of the color revolutions have had complicity of various government agencies as well, but they appear to be indigenous, organic, authentic revolutions of the street. But often they turn out to be orchestrated, organized, coordinated. That is why he is called the headline describes him, quote, the connoisseur of chaos. One could also call him the creator and coordinator of chaos. He does it by infiltrating media groups, using what's called NGOs, non-governmental organizations, and does so through funneling money in a wide range of means and mechanisms to basically infiltrate movements and instigate rebellion. And he's accustomed to seeing that work, letting that sink currencies, letting that destroy economies, letting that overthrow governments, as it has in many parts of Eastern and Central Europe when he was a kid, and as many parts of Eastern and Central Europe now with his own influence, creating that possibility and that outcome. Now, what is one of George Soros's favorite groups? Well, this article details, Soros's favorite is Black Lives Matter. He has helped create it. He's helped fund it. He's helped push the fake narratives that surround it to the degree that now we're even seeing the former Clinton campaign manager and other high-profile individuals, including members of Congress, call for literally defunding the police. Los Angeles is even talking about diverting large amounts of money from the police into groups as directed by Black Lives Matter. Imagine a world without the police. That's the world we're witnessing right now in many city streets across the country. It is a world of chaos, of violence, of disorganization. Indeed, the police is the sort of the thin blue line between criminality and chaos and an organized society rooted in its traditional institutions and American constitutional law. George Soros is someone that helped facilitate, promote, and propagate Black Lives Matter with his substantial funding in a wide range of directions. In the same context, he's not only funded various forms like illegal immigration organization and attacks on the Catholic Church. Well, dig deeper into Black Lives Matter's other strange affiliations and associations. And what you'll find is that Black Lives Matter often focuses obsessively on issues of illegal immigration, issues against the church, including promoting various issues related to more extremist aspects of gay and lesbian politics. Does that sound like a group rooted in actual black lives that actually would be concerned with actual black lives? Or is that a political template to create insurrection in the country along the lines of George Soros's agenda? Indeed, if you read and watch and go through what Black Lives Matter supports and subsidizes, what they patronize and propagate, what you will find is an organization that is almost strictly in line with George Soros's agenda, but not one that is aligned with the street, that is aligned with black business, that is aligned with black churches, that is aligned with the cornerstone and the foundation of black civil rights in this country going on over more than a century.
Now let's hear from some people, Americans of African descent, who reject BLM as legitimately representing the interests of blacks. First, here's some audio from an interview on YouTube on a channel called Vlad TV, November 30, 2016, with Lord Jamar. Born Lorenzo Deschelus, if I pronounce that correctly, he is known professionally as Lord Jamar and is an American rapper, DJ, record producer, actor and podcaster. Play soundbite 3, please.
Like, I don't know. I just thought that was weird shit. And I'm not no Black Lives Matter supporter. Like,
you're not? You
know, no, absolutely.
Why not?
Because it's not our movement. This is a movement that was given to us by, you know, George Soros and his fucking boys. Because they saw how things were going and they didn't want it to go back to the 60s. To where we start having our own organic movements. That was a big fucking problem for them. So let's give the people a movement that we can control. We'll provide them the leaders and all of this type of shit. And yeah, that's what Black Lives Matter is. Look at the leaders of Black Lives Matter.
Are there leaders of Lives Matter?
Yeah. Who? Look at these lesbian women who are trying to incorporate, you know, LG, whatever the fuck the letters are, incorporate those, their concerns into black people's concerns. Go to the website. Look it up. Google George Soros and Black Lives Matter. See what comes up.
Suck it up.
Okay. And you know, y'all out there, George Soros is a fucking multi-billionaire down with, you know, some of the 12 richest people in the fucking
world. He raised $100 million.
Yep.
For Black Lives Matter Coalition. The funding comes in addition to more than $33 million in grants from top Democratic Party donor George Soros. Okay, here we go. Okay, so
what billionaire would have done that for the Black Panther Party?
$33 million. Well, hold on.
Huh?
Hold on. In high school, I read some books about the Black Panther movement.
Mm-hmm. Charlton Heston, maybe people like that.
The Black Panther movement would have. There was a famous book called Radical Chic and Mau Mauing the Flatcatchers.
Okay.
And it basically puts you in these scenes where you had these, you know, the Huey P. Newtons and the Bobby Seals would go to these rich white
mm-hmm.
families' houses and have these intellectual debates.
I know about that.
You know what I'm saying? With these white millionaires.
Did anybody give them $30 million at
that
time?
Well, at the end, these people would cut checks.
Not no $30 million checks. Maybe a $5,000, $10,000. You see what I'm saying? This was breakfast programs and, you know, a smaller scale.
But you know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Rich white people have historically financed some of this stuff.
Some of it, not all of it.
Which is why I said
some of
it. You know what I mean? Yeah, I didn't say all of it.
And that was more guilt money rather than
fair enough
control money. See, this started at the impetus of the whole shit. This is control money. This is not, oh, I feel bad for what we've done as white people. You came to my house and shamed me, and now I'm going to cut you a check. You know what I mean? That's not what that is about. That's about, let us give you a movement that we can control. Use certain symbolism from the original civil rights movement, like the black, you know, red, black, and green, all these different symbols. We're going to incorporate that, but only it's going to be a movement that we control. We decide what the messages are. We decide what the slogans are. You know, what happened to no justice, no peace, and, you know, no peace, no justice. Now it's hands up, don't shoot, fucking I can't breathe, and all these negative affirmations that, you know, who made that shit up? You know what I mean? Wasn't me.
Now, he is no fan of Donald Trump, as I understand anyway. But he, like this next gentleman we're going to play, Chaziel Sons, who is described as a black activist who left Black Lives Matter, neither is he. Neither of these two are. But at the same time, they realize that there's something behind all this symbolism that's not right. It's not, there's not some legitimate grassroots movement. Here's some audio from YouTube dated December 30, 2017, in which Chaziel Sons discusses why he left Black Lives Matter. And Sons sees BLM being used to involve American blacks in a civil war between the political left and right. Play soundbite 4, please.
I'm basically say it like this. Around the time, I say probably the end of 2015, somewhere in there, probably going into 2016, I started to notice, I began to notice infiltrators coming into the movement, which is already, it's been like this for a long time. But I actually started to see them all online, making fake pages. And basically, these fake people, part of the black movement or whatever you want to call it, were basically, you know, feeding off our emotions, trying to get us involved in things that we're not involved in. trying to get us to believe in things that we weren't familiar with, and basically pushing us far to be more left and democratic. And one thing I want to say right now is, if you are a revolutionary or anything like that, you don't even believe, you're not even supposed to believe in politics. So for the people who still are believing that this movement, this black movement, even some of these white movements are legit, man, you have a lot of growing to do. I'm going to say it again, you have a lot of growing to do. And I'm going to concentrate right now, anyway, on the black leaders, okay? The black leaders, a lot of the black leaders, and I want to hit with this video. A lot of the black leaders are straight leading us to our demise, okay? They have us working, doing their dirty work. For us, their dirty work, I mean the far left's dirty work. They got us working basically for them, because how they're getting us is they're playing us emotionally. And they're basically saying how racist and how messed up guys are, the far right and the neo-Nazis are, because they need all the help that they can get. So they're getting the gays, they're getting people of other cultures, the people of the far left. I'm talking about the far left. I'm getting somewhere with this. They're getting gays, they're getting black people, anybody who doesn't like Donald Trump. They're basically trying to get you to fight for a war that is being started on American turf very, very soon. The left is going against the right. It's a huge civil war that's being planned out. Their side, to fight this civil war that they're planning out, that they're already being prepared for, you're going to have to choose a side. Don't set yourself up to get slaughtered.
When you see Black Lives Matter all over the place lately in these protests and unrest in the U.S. and other countries, you should realize what's really behind all the hype and fawningly favorable coverage of BLM and these events in the media. As an example of what the left is hoping all this will lead to, let's look at the recent takeover of the multi-block section of downtown Seattle known as Capitol Hill, which they are calling CHAZ, short for Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, proclaimed to now be an independent nation. Here's what Fox's Tucker Carlson had to say about CHAZ on his program June 10. Play soundbite 5, please.
An army of Black Lives Matter activists have taken over six city blocks in downtown Seattle. They're surrounding an abandoned police precinct building. They've given themselves a name, the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. That's their new country within the borders of our country. They say they will not leave and disband their new nation until the city's police department is abolished completely. Dan Springer is at the zone in Seattle for us tonight. Dan?
I'm on camera. I'm not endangering shit. Yeah, and this is the third night of what can only be described as a complete takeover of a seven-block area of a Seattle neighborhood. And we don't see a single police officer or city official anywhere. So it does appear as if the protesters are digging in for the long haul. They're calling it the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. I've also seen the name Free Capitol Hill. And right in the center of it is the Seattle Police Department's East Precinct. Police said today that they are boarded up and abandoned the building on Monday after receiving a credible threat that criminals within the protest group were planning to burn it down. They did not say how cutting and running makes it safer. As we looked around the police-free zone today, we saw roughly 20 tents, lots of graffiti, and barricades at each of the six entrances. There's also security guards. We noticed one had several ammunition clips. One of our fine protesters here showing his ignorance. A local station got video of several guards armed with assault rifles. They are asking for identification before letting people in, and police have received reports of the armed guards demanding money from some businesses inside their area. We also saw people passing out food in what they call a no-cop co-op, and they made a long list of demands. We have a full screen, we can show you at least some of them. Among them, abolish the Seattle Police Department and the court system, disarm all cops until they are all fired, fired and abolish youth jails. The mayor's office did not respond to our request for a request for information about what they plan to do next and how this all ends. And you can see one of our fine protesters here just yelling to hear himself yell. Yeah, very good. Okay, so Tucker, we'll send it back to you. Yeah, this is what you're dealing with out here.
Be careful, Dan. Well, that's America right now, tonight. It's totally cool. Not a big deal. Just upset about police brutality. Right. The demands, you heard Dan Springer mention a couple of them, abolishing the police. They're also demanding the immediate retrial of all non-white violent felons currently in prison. People convicted of a violent crime who are not white, they all need new trials. But they're also demanding the abolition of all prisons, not just those for young people. They demand a ban on disturbing homeless encampments in any way. They demand an end to all evictions. They demand segregated hospitals, something we were pleased to get over 60 years ago, but they want them back. They want black doctors and nurses exclusively hired to care for black patients. They want segregation. You cool with that? And of course, they demand an immediate amnesty for all rioters in the past 2 weeks. We wanted to share those demands with you, be honest about them, because nobody else is going to tell you. The left's preferred response is much like its response to the rioting around the country. Ignore it. It's cool. It's totally fine. Yeah, they're demanding segregation. Not a big deal. Governor Jay Inslee of Washington was just asked about the mob that has taken over the center of his state's largest city. Inslee's response? Never heard of him.
Governor, I'd like to ask you about what's going on in Seattle. There's this thing called the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. What's your thought on that? The fact that the protesters have taken that over and not allowing people to come and go freely? And regarding the Capitol Garden.
Well, that's news to me, so I'll have to reserve any comment about it. I have not heard anything about that.
Yeah, not a big deal. A group of racist lunatics with semi-automatic weapons have created its own country in the middle of your biggest city, but you're not really aware that that's happening, right? So what happens when leaders behave like that? When they're so weak, they can't even criticize lunatics with guns creating a new country in the middle of their biggest city? What do you think it does?
All this is very negative, of course, and causes many people despair and worry about the future of America, our country. Although other commentators, such as Dr. Steve Turley on his YouTube channel, are seeing what they see are very positive signs of the left destroying itself over these things. He has a recent episode called Massive Backlash Against the Woke Far Left, and in which he explains this. I hope he's right, but like many of you, I'm also worried. For the life of me, given that the Democratic Party has embraced the far left and is promoting its agenda, I can't see how anyone in their right mind could be a Democrat today. At the same time, I realize that tens of millions of diehard Democrats, including members of my own family, will vote for leftist Democratic candidates this November. The question is, how many? Those of us who want to see America continue as a nation, the nation we have known it as, who believe in capitalism, liberty, and yes, among other things, our criminal justice system, a system that isn't perfect, but which has been far better than in many other parts of the world. Well, we have our work cut out for us in the coming months. The elections this November will no doubt be the most important of our lives. That's it for another show. Look for us again 2 weeks from today in the same time slot. Have a good evening.